Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll get the details about Discovery Southeast's banquet and auction. KJ Metcalf and Rick Iannolino will tell us about the upcoming Friends of Admiralty Island annual meeting. We'll get a preview of Perseverance Theater's upcoming production of The Odd Couple. We'll speak with Shari Paul, one of Aware's four women of distinction. And Michaela Moore and students will talk about the JDHS drama team winning the state championship. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs is reviewing President Obama's 2016 budget proposal. As Matt Laszlo reports, lawmakers are including federal contracting needs in budget talks.
It's no secret there are a lot of needs in Indian country, which is why the President's budget proposal is bringing high hope to Native leaders. The proposal increases the Indian Affairs budget by 12% in areas ranging from strengthening families to health care. Amberi Barb is a budget policy analyst and Program Director at the National Congress of American Indians, or NCAI.
I think most of Indian country supports these, but I haven't heard from everyone yet, but generally the concepts that we've read them has been received very positively from tribal leaders.
The President's proposal seeks to fix a disconnect between money and budget policies when it comes to contracting with the federal government. There are mandatory costs for projects funded by the government and partnered with a tribal contractor, but in many cases, the government fails to pay up, which sows uncertainty for tribal contractors. Under the President's budget, these contract support costs would be moved from discretionary, where they are habitually unpaid, to non-discretionary, where they are more binding. Some say this move would be a promising shift in the self-determination of tribal communities. North Dakota Senator and Indian Affairs Committee member John Hovind says he wants to address issues like these, but in the end, it comes down to money.
Our challenge is going to be how do you pay for it and then staying within a budget that we can get to balance and reducing the deficit? That's the challenge.
Senator John Tester of Montana is the former chairman of the Indian Affairs Committee. As we hopped onto a Senate subway train with Tester, we asked whether he thought issues like contract support costs could be resolved.
And so, yeah, I do. I do have some optimism. And I think this is one of those issues, hopefully we can get bipartisan support. So there will be people that try to do all sorts of stuff to the budget, but there should be an opportunity to discuss it on the floor and make the case.
At a hearing, Indian Affairs Committee Chairman John Barrasso noted that contract support costs would legally need an offset in the budget to become non-discretionary. Assistant Secretary for the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Kevin Washburn, testified that the movement of those costs would allow the Bureau to request less discretionary funds.
We've not been very trustworthy before, neither the administration nor Congress, in fully funding contract support costs.
Budget negotiations are underway on Capitol Hill, and Republicans hope to unveil their counteroffer to the President in the coming weeks, and it's unclear if they'll embrace the reforms he's proposing for contractors in Indian country. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
An acclaimed Alaska Native survival story is headed to the big screen. A movie is in the works based on the bestseller Two Old Women by Fairbanks writer Velma Wallace. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Two Old Women tells the story of a pair of Gwich'in Athabascan elders left behind by their starving tribe during a harsh winter and how the pair employ ingenuity to survive and ultimately help save their people. Alaska Native actress and Sleeping Lady Films president Irene Bedard has purchased movie rights to the book.
Really want to shoot in Alaska and really excited to get the project going.
Bedard says the plan is to produce the movie in the Gwich'in Athabascan language.
Potentially shoot in both Gwich'in and in English, but definitely be utilizing the Gwich'in people.
The screenplay for Two Old Women was written by Gwich'in Athabascan writer Princess Dajrai Johnson.
So much of it I could really visualize and really see the characters and the scenery.
Johnson says the book's minimalist dialogue and lack of action make it challenging to adapt, but its message comes through strong.
How connected we are to the land and animals.
Johnson and Bedard both want the movie Two Old Women to be filmed in Alaska, but say that hinges on a state film tax credit program legislators are considering cutting. Bedard says filming could start as early as this summer. For National Native News, I'm Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Alaska.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Joining me now in the studio is the Executive Director of Discovery Southeast, Mr. Sean Isley. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Scott.
Thanks for coming in today. So, a busy place over at Discovery, it sounds like, right now.
We have got tons of stuff going on. We've got spring programs already getting planned, summer programs getting planned, and a big banquet coming up March 28th.
Yeah. Tell us about this banquet and what it supports.
So this is our annual banquet and auction, and it supports all of our program. It's our big source of unrestricted funding, and it's a great way for the community to come together and a fun time.
So I think most of our listeners probably know what Discovery Southeast does, but give us a little refresher.
Discovery Southeast's mission is connect people with nature, and we provide a lot of hands-on education programs. So we run a great summer camp where we get kids outside every day, all day. We run our core program, Nature Studies, is in local 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade classrooms, where we go in with science-based lessons. We have a 45-minute introduction, and then we do a 2.5-hour field trip, taking kids outdoors in our beautiful backyard. We do that every fall, winter, and spring with the kids. And, you know, we ask the teacher, or a teacher actually asked the kids, how many get out with an adult who's not a Discovery Southeast naturalist? And only about half of the kids said they do. So it's a fantastic, important program for Juneau kids.
Absolutely. And in full disclosure, I worked for Discovery Southeast for many, many years and loved it. And I would say that is one of the most important functions that it has is I would take some third graders out who had never been into those green things over there on the hill. They'd be like, where are we going? What are the woods? You know, I've never been in there before. And then, of course, we would just have a blast learning and experiencing.
Yeah, and it's right there for us, and it's something I think is really fundamental for our community. It's important for so many of us to get outdoors. It's important for a lot of our industries, and just the natural area around Juneau is pretty central to our community. So it's important for kids to get out and experience it.
Absolutely. So this year looks like it's going to be at the Jack.
That's right. Yeah, I think we're focusing on having a little bit more casual, more fun event. It should be a really fun time. We've got lots of silent and live auction items coming in. The keynote is a cruise for two to the Sea of Cortez, offered by Uncruise Adventures, which is an awesome trip. They're big supporters.
Like the Sea of Cortez?
I believe so.
It's not just a nickname for some bay here in Southeast?
No, it's not. It's a wonderful cruise. They've donated a cruise every year, and I've been able to talk to some of the folks who have won it in past years, and they've had a fantastic time. It's a great experience.
Excellent. And I understand you'll be doing some teacher awards?
Yeah, so that's a big thing this year. We have teacher expeditions that go out every summer, and we've revamped a few of them this year, so we have some great local options. Working with Richard Carsonson in Berners Bay is one of them. Another one is going up to the ice field and spending some time at Camp 17 with the Juneau Ice Field Research Program. And we're awarding a Discovery Award to a local teacher that does a great job of getting their students outdoors, and we'll be awarding that at the banquet, and that teacher will get a free tuition on one of our teacher expeditions.
And these teacher expeditions are ways for educators to get credit continuing ed, right?
Yeah, it's continuing education programs for teachers, and they do get credit through UAS. They're fantastic programs. We get grants from several community sponsors. CORE is supporting our Bears of Admiralty program this summer, and we have a lot of other great programs. So those are fantastic opportunities, and the price is wonderful. I think if a tourist goes out to look at Bears and Admiralty for a day, it's like $730. And these programs for teachers are week-long with guiding, gear, and food for $650.
Wow. Let's see. What else should we talk about? You probably have a spring break camp coming up, but I bet it's almost full.
Yep, we do, and I think, I'm not sure if there are any spots in that. We'll update that online this afternoon.
And it's still a long way off, but you'll have Outdoor Explorers this summer, right?
Yeah, we're really looking forward to Outdoor Explorers. We're going to do a double camp this year, so we've noticed that a lot of the other summer options in town aren't going to be offered, and so we're looking at running two camps of 12 all summer long for 9 weeks, and I think it's going to be a really fantastic program. We've got support from the Forest Service to use the Crystal Lake facility as kind of a staging area, and so we'll have kids out there every week. We'll have a group of 7 through 9-year-olds and a second group of 10 through 12-year-olds.
Exciting. Lots of stuff going on at Disco right now, but perhaps it's the auction and banquet on the 28th that is most important.
Yep. Really love for people to come out. The details and tickets are online for that at discoverysoutheast.org. And there you can also find out more about the teacher expeditions and register for those courses.
Sean Isley, ED of Discovery Southeast. Anything else?
Really hope to see everyone at our banquet. That's our big fundraiser, and it's a fun time, so please come on out.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
I'm bound with the tall pine trees. Whoa. Opera to Go presents the delightful and whimsical opera, The Cunning Little Vixen. Animal and human creatures interact in a tale centering around a young vixen and her adventures, sung in Czech with projected English translations. The production features great singers, a core of dancers from Juno Dance Theater, and members of the Amalga Chamber Orchestra. Final weekend of performances this Friday and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School. Tickets available at the Jack, the bookstores, and online at operatogo.net.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015. Scott Burton, your host, and now in the studio with me is Ricky Annalino and K.J. Metcalf of the Friends of Admiralty Island. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show today. K.J., you want to start and give us an update on what Friends of Admiralty Island is up to these days?
Sure. We've got some exciting things going on. We have two initiatives that we're launching this year. One is a study of Seymour Canal. Turns out Seymour Canal is, which is just west of Juneau here on Admiralty Island, is one of the Alaska's richest winter waters, and it supports an amazing number of humpback whales and birds and fish. And nobody really knows why that's so prolific. So we'd like to have a symposium on it and kind of explore it and see what kind of information has been gathered, what we would like to see gathered, and figure out a way to do that. The other initiative is an effort to do some testing in the Greens Creek mine area of the water quality and kind of look at the 1981 pre-mining baseline and compare what's happening there today to what was before the mine was there. And I think that all the stakeholders in that effort, the mine itself and the Forest Service and the Department of Environmental Conservation and the people of Angoon would all like to see the mine as clean as possible. It's going to be there, has a permit to be there until 2095, and there's going to be tons and tons of tailings. And don't know what the future holds, but we want it to be a clean area. And so we're having our annual meeting this Saturday, a business meeting starting at 4 and a potluck at 6 and a program at 7 o'clock. John Neary is presenting, and he's talking with some help from other folks about the ancient trails on Admiralty and the more modern trails. So that should be a really good program.
Okay. Rick, what's your involvement with Friends of Admiralty Island?
I've been on the board for a while, and I started kayaking. And I met K.J., who was the first superintendent of the monument, Admiralty National Monument, on a boat before it was actually a monument. That's how I started as a kayaker. And I've been in Seymour Canal, in fact, and I can attest to everything he's saying. It's a tremendous place right here in our backyard.
Absolutely.
You can paddle through Juneau directly there.
You guys have both been associated with this organization for a long time. Rick, why are you passionate about it?
Well, I've been paddling Admiralty around it and going over it through the canoe portage and a lot of time in Seymour for the past 35 years. And it's a jewel. It's a jewel that most people haven't visited, but it's very accessible.
Mm.
I might mention that Rick has an article in our recent newsletter. Folks could go online and get that at friendsofadmiralty.org. And it's really an interesting newsletter. And Rick's story just tells an amazing story of an encounter with some whales and an encounter with a bear that kind of captures much of what Admiralty is about.
Okay, so this annual meeting is this Saturday at the Yacht Club. What time does it start?
We have a business meeting at 4, a potluck at 6, and the program at 7.
Okay, and you were also talking about something at the Angoon Airport, is that right?
Oh, right. There is a meeting tonight, 6 to 9, at the Centennial Hall by FAA, and there is a proposed land airport adjacent to Angoon, and it's kind of an important issue. So if Angoon deserves an airport that's safe and accessible, and operates well. And so Angoon has had a hard time over the years, but this could be a really big help for the community. So I would urge people to turn out and support that.
Okay, and then also, it's a couple months off, but your May cruise. You want to tell us about that, Rick, or KJ?
Well, we will be going to Seymour Canal from Juneau down Stevens Passage, is that right?
Yeah, and down and to Brothers.
And Brother Islands, and then into, well, just the beginning of Seymour, which is Mole Harbor. And there'll be hopefully traditional people, traditional owners of the land, and biologists. And
I might mention Jan Straley, Sitka whale biologist, will be along. And she started her whale work in Seymour Canal, and that's what she says brought her to love the whales. She went in there with her husband to do some bird work, and they were overwhelmed by the number of whales they found.
Wow. Sounds like a rich place, that's for sure. And to learn more about this, you can go to the annual meeting coming up this Saturday. Gentlemen, are we missing anything, Rick?
Yeah, I wanted to say one thing. In the tickets for this cruise will be available in April.
Okay.
There's about 120, is that what it is?
Yeah.
120. Sometimes they go within 3 or 4 days.
Mm.
So when you hear about it, you shouldn't wait around because they'll be gone real quick. That's my suggestion.
Sure. And again, what's the website they can go to?
Friendsofadmiralty.org.
Okay. Well, KJ Metcalf and Rick Iannolino, are we missing anything?
No, I think we got
Excellent.
It all.
Thank you so much.
Scott.
Thank you, guys.
This is Bird Note. Some birds are born with the ability to sing. And some birds learn to do it while they're young. Just like humans, who have to learn to speak. It's a key distinction. Innate ability versus learned. Because it turns out that vocal learning in songbirds and humans may have more in common than anyone suspected. Recent DNA research reveals that songbirds and humans share a consistent set of roughly 50 genes that appear crucial to vocal learning. When these genes are active in humans, they are also active in songbirds. There's a common pattern that applies to very different creatures that share a need to learn complex songs and speech. The clincher is that birds that don't learn songs and primates that don't speak lack this genetic setup. Discovery of this genetic commonality was headline news when the research results were published in December 2014. It's a breakthrough in our understanding of the mechanisms involved in vocal learning. And it's possible that because scientists now understand the genetic similarities between speech and birdsong learning, they can use that insight to study human speech acquisition in new ways. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann.
Perseverance Theater brings Juno the laugh riot of the year, Neil Simon's The Odd Couple. This Tony Award-winning comedy will keep you in stitches as we look back at these men from another era and ask ourselves, has that much really changed? The Odd Couple opens on March 6th and runs through March 29th. For more information and tickets, visit Hearthside Books, The Jack, ptalaska.org, or call 463-TIXS.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015. It's about 25 minutes after the hour, and I've been joined by a couple folks from Perseverance's The Odd Couple, director Michael Stevenson, and Felix, a.k.a. James Sullivan. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good afternoon. How's it going?
It's nice to have you. So, Michael, you are from Sacramento, is that right, directing this play?
Right. Yeah.
And what's your experience directing in with this play?
Oh, well, this is actually the first Neil Simon I've ever directed. I've directed a lot of other plays, but it's the first Neil Simon, so it's really been a lot of fun. And there's a lot of great actors up here, James one of them. And so it's really been a great time. It's a really new experience for me.
And how about you, James? Is this the first time playing Felix?
Oh, yeah, it's my first time doing The Odd Couple, and it's my first full-length attempt at Neil Simon also. I've worked on some of his plays in Scene Study. I did one in high school years ago. But, yeah, it's my first time getting to play Felix.
Yeah. Speaking of Neil Simon, what do you guys think so far?
What do we think of the play?
Yeah.
Oh.
working within one of his works.
Oh, well, you know, it's first and foremost, it's a terrific play. Just bottom line, it's just got a great story in it, and that makes a lot of what he does go. And then secondly, he's a great joke teller. He's got an amazing verbal wit, sets up a joke like nobody's business. And then thirdly, it's actually quite touching. It's if there wasn't such a strong relationship between the two men and these almost archetypal characters in American culture, anybody can say Oscar and Felix, and you know what they're talking about. It wouldn't work. So it's been a real eye opener for me.
Yeah, and James, can you tell us about the rest of the cast?
Sure. We have Boston Christopher is playing opposite me as our Oscar, and it just seems to come natural to him. I'll tell you that. I'll just leave it at that. But he's a wonderful actor. He's a wonderful Oscar. It's actually my first time to work with him since he came back to Alaska and started working at Perseverance. He was here in the 90s and then left and came back. And when I moved here, we've been doing a lot of stuff at Perseverance, but never together. So it's our first time to work together, and it's been great. And the rest of the card players there, Ben Brown, Enrique Bravo, Corn Hughes, and
Jeff Hedges.
And Jeff Hedges. And it's just a lot of fun. We have the two young ladies, Heather Laverne and Olivia Schrum.
Those the Pigeon Sisters?
Yes, the Pigeon Sisters, yeah. Yes, on our fateful double date, which I completely undermine and ruin for Oscar.
Don't judge yourself.
Yeah.
Don't be so harsh.
Not ready to start dating. But it's a lot of fun. And I'm having a great time. Like you were saying, Neil Simon, he's just one of the few playwrights when you just read it on your own in a room by yourself, you end up laughing out loud because it's just so well written. The jokes are in there. So it's a lot of fun to do that. It's really structured. He knows how to put together a play. So well structured, so well put together. You just feel comfortable taking it on.
Yeah. What have you enjoyed most about working on this production, Michael?
I would say it's been a pleasure to get to know all these people up here. Last time I was here was 6 years ago, and I only had a three-person cast? No. Mm-hmm. Four-person cast. So it's been great. We've got 8 people in the cast, and it's a delight to have all these people in the room working together. A lot of energy there, and they're all new to me. I didn't know anybody from the last time I was here, so that's been really exciting. And then it's just, you know, it's a play that makes us all laugh in rehearsal, so that's a great thing.
Sure. What about challenges?
I think, for me, the biggest challenge was getting Tony Randall out of my head. And it's so familiar, you know. I grew up watching the reruns all through the late 70s and 80s, and they were on just every night. And, no, the TV series is a little different because the TV series is more about these two men living together.
Mm.
The play is on the basis is about these two men in crisis. One's been divorced a few months and one just got kicked out the night prior. And they're really not in a good place, but they come to, you know, try and help each other out. And in the course of that crisis and that help, they end up driving each other crazy and a lot of comedy ensues. So it's good fun, but, it's also dealing just with the play itself and not trying to get some of that stuff out of my head because it's very familiar to me, just like I'm sure everyone else.
Yeah, if you guys had to sort of comment on some of this play's themes, so friendship for sure, right? Oh. And what else do you guys notice within the play?
Forgiveness, I'd say, is another big one. And also, it was written at a time when divorce was starting to surge in the United States. It was going to go through its all-time high in just a couple of years. So it was a really disquieting time for America, period. People were kind of flipping out. It's kind of an examination I don't want to say, but there are several relationships that people have to forgive each other by the end of the play, and they do. And some of those are husbands and wives. So it's a really interesting examination of something that's becoming kind of an epidemic in the United States at the time.
Sure. Anything to add to that, James?
No, other than it's also about how people, you know, get to understand each other. All these men and their middle-aged men, you don't think of them really of them trying to be their support group. They don't use the term. The term isn't in the play at all. But it's those guys trying to help out, especially at the time when Felix is at his lowest point. He's at his really at his rock bottom in his life when the play starts. And particularly Oscar, but also the other gentlemen in the play, they're just card buddies. But those are the guys that you end up, you know, looking after you, trying to protect you, trying to make sure you'll be all right. And it has its touching moments in between all its yelling, screaming, and hilarity.
I'm thinking of the movie, too,
sure.
With Lemon and Mathau. And that the movie starts following Felix out in the streets of New York. But the play starts at the card table. Is that right?
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a great moment where they don't realize that they don't even know why Felix is missing. There's just an empty chair at the table, and they start talking about it. And then they find out by a phone call that Felix has been and his wife have split. And they immediately become concerned because they also know what type of person he is. He's not the most stable man to begin with. And that's immediately that's where it all starts to. He walks in the door. Felix doesn't know that they actually know at this moment. And that's where it all the tears and the crisis, and because it's Neil Simon, a great deal of hilarity at the same time.
Absolutely. Well, can't wait to see it. Really looking forward to it. What are some of the dates that people should be aware of coming up?
We're opening this Friday, right?
Yeah, that's the big one. Friday. That's the one I'm aware
soon.
Of. But we preview tonight at 7:30 and tomorrow.
No, not tonight.
Oh, not tonight. Well, it's Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's Tuesday, everyone.
Back up.
check my own calendar first. Yeah. Wednesday and Thursday, we have previews at 7:30, and then we open Friday. And then we'll be running through every weekend through the month of March with Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights at 7:30. And we do Sunday matinees now at 4 o'clock. Check our website and or go to the Jack or Hearthside where we sell our tickets. And make sure you get them early. We sold out a lot of shows early with Chicago this fall. And I have a feeling I don't think we'll sell quite as hot as Chicago was. You know, there's no beautiful dancers and very tight leggings, just a bunch of middle-aged men playing poker. But with that being said, I think it's going to sell very well.
The leggings still look good, too.
So. Yeah.
Of course, all this information is at perseverancetheater.org, and so check that out for times, tickets, all that kind of stuff. Well, Michael Stevenson, James Solomon, it's been a lot of fun. Are we missing anything? Anything you guys want to add?
No,
I don't think so. I think
you've
got
come
covered.
On down.
Yeah, come on down.
Just make sure you come on down. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
All right. Forgive me for this song, guys. Thank you.
CNN Spotlight Music Series presents Way Off Broadway, a spectacular evening of live Broadway songs by members of the cast of Chicago, including Colette Costa, Erica Lee, Felisa Thole, Enrique Bravo, and Shona Osterhout. Hosted by Ben Brown. Join us at Goldtown Theater Tuesday, March 10th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets at krnn.org.
This is a Juno afternoon here on Tuesday, March 3rd. It's about 20 minutes till the top of the hour, and I've been joined in the studio by AWARE's Executive Director, Sarah Lynn Tabachnik. Welcome, Sarah Lynn.
Thank you. Hi, Scott.
And one of AWARE's four women of distinction, Sherry Paul. Welcome, Sherry.
Thank you.
So nice to have you. Let's start with you, Sarah Lynn, and tell us a little bit about AWARE and this event, this great big deal event.
Thank you. AWARE provides services for victims and survivors of domestic and sexual violence. We have a safe shelter and many community-based services as well. And in addition to the intervention services we provide in Juneau and Northern Southeast, we also do a lot with prevention, a lot of prevention services. Girls on the Run is a familiar strategy to many people. And we also oversee the Juneau Choice and Accountability Program, which is the domestic violence offender program. So, you know, we kind of have these serious things that we address every day. And we also have this annual tremendous fundraiser where we honor women in the community who have done outstanding works, made significant contributions. And that's our Women of Distinction event, which is happening this year on Saturday at Centennial Hall. Doors open at 5:30, and at 7 p.m. the program begins. And this year, of course, we are honoring Sherry as one of our four honorees.
Okay. And what do you think motivated the board to choose Sherry as one of your four?
You know, it's very fun to see the nomination forms. I get to see them as well. Because I know Sherry, and, you know, hi, Sherry, like that. And then you read about people, you have no idea all, I had no idea all the contributions that Sherry has made and the volunteering that she has done in the community that have impacted so many people. She's worked with Girl Scouts. She is the person who, when children need a first job, are you listening? Mm-hmm. You can contact Sherry. She has gotten hundreds, maybe thousands, of kids their first job at the Juneau Public Market, which happens Thanksgiving weekend at Centennial Hall. And she's done a lot of volunteering as well with Sukkot Shalom, which is the Juneau Jewish community, and other things, which I'll let Sherry tell you about.
So, yeah, Sherry, it sounds like you spend part of your professional life working in the Lieutenant Governor's office. Is that right?
That's right. Yep. I work now for Byron Mallott, and that's a lot of fun. I'm his gatekeeper and do all the scheduling and travel and constituent work and I get to meet wonderful people. And then my previous professional life, too, I've been always involved with social service programs. I've had the fortunate opportunity to work for 8 years with the Children's Trust Fund, so which is the Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention Fund. But then I always seem, receiving this award, you do a lot of reflection, like, what have I done over so many other wonderful people in this community, and how can they pick me over these great people? And you do a lot of reflection, and you reflect on we all give back in one way or another, and that's I realize that's who I am. So I come home from work, and I always seem to be involved with, you know, they could be short-term projects. For a long time, I worked with the Pro-Choice Coalition back in the 80s, 90s, helping to bring the Planned Parenthood here, and to just raising two daughters and doing volunteer work in the schools and with Girl Scouts, because they're both in Girl Scouts, which led to the national board. So I keep busy.
Yeah. And who inspired you to be so socially active?
That's a great question. In all that reflection I did, I grew up that way in my family. In my talk, I talk a little bit about what's called tikkun olam. It's a Hebrew word for repairing the world. And I learned about that really just teaching Sunday school here. But in reflection, it's my parents were busy. They were part of organizations, my sisters, my brother. It was just who we are and what we did. So I can't imagine not doing something extra.
And I know each of you will address the audience on Saturday night. May I ask, can we have a small preview? And maybe you just gave us a little bit of one.
That was a little one. Mine is also going to be a little bit interactive because for some reason having P as the last name as my last name, I'm the last speaker of the evening. So I'm like, what can I do to make it a little bit more exciting? And after all that wonderful food that's going to be served and catered and alcohol and just visiting and socializing with friends. So it's going to be a little interaction and then a really fun quote that I found at the end. So you'll just have to buy a ticket and come and support AWARE. And that's really also a great reason why this nomination is important, because it's to another great organization here.
Absolutely. Sarah Lynn, do you know how many years AWARE's been doing Women of Distinction?
This is our 19th year.
Okay.
Yeah. So Exciting. It's been a while.
And can you remind us again the details of Saturday?
Yeah, thank you. Centennial Hall. Doors open at 5:30. And the program begins at 7 p.m. If you haven't gotten your ticket yet, you can call AWARE at 586-6623. Tickets are $70. We also have Angelina Ahrens as our MC. We have Tom Loker and Clay Good, who will be providing music from 5:30 to 7. That's when people can look at items for the silent auction. Bid on, we've got some great adventures and experiences as well as tangible items and art. And Taylor Vitticus.
Do you have baked goods?
Oh, we might even have baked goods.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like a great evening. I really want to thank you both for coming on the show today. Is there anything either of you would like to add?
Well, we hope to see everyone there.
All right. So thank you so much, Sherry Paul and Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, for coming in today. We'll see you on Saturday.
Thanks, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Dear Mom, thank you for quitting smoking. It's hard to do, but smoking can kill you, so quitting saved your life. I'm so lucky to have parents like you and Daddy. Other parents would probably say, oh, he's just a kid. Love, Nick.
My kids inspired me to quit. Find your reason to quit smoking.
Call Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. Free for all Alaskans at 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
This message is brought to you by Search, your partner in health.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015. Scott Burton, your host, and I am lucky enough now with me to have in the studio several members of the JDHS drama team, the state championship team, you all.
Thank you.
That is awesome. And also Michaela Moore, your instructor. Welcome, Michaela.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So can somebody start by painting the scene for our listeners, what it looked like at East Anchorage High, this competition? Was it at East Anchorage? Did I get it right?
Yes.
Yeah. It was a lot of, there was a lot of teams all over the state. I think it's like 27 different schools from all over the state, a lot from Anchorage, a lot from Southeast. And we all would compete in these different events, different acting events. And it'd be in like different rounds and then go to finals. And it was, and everyone did really great. Well, I mean, we're the state champions, so I guess that's apparent. But it was a lot of fun.
And remind us of your name?
Oh, I'm Liam Porter-Bell.
All right. Thanks, Liam. And so are like you walking around and eyeing the other team down? Like, we're JDHS from Juno. What was the atmosphere like?
My name is Brita. It's definitely competitive, for sure. It's not so much within the Southeast region, which I think is really interesting. The Southeast region has a really, really friendly atmosphere. We go around, we talk to other teams, and when we're at state, we're rooting for our region, really. I mean, it's kind of Southeast versus Anchorage, which is kind of funny. I mean, we're all from different teams, but it's nice to have that kind of camaraderie between everyone.
Okay. Michaela, what are you most proud of about this whole thing?
First of all, I'm proud of who these people are. The 10 kids that I took, they're awesome people. And it was great to travel with them. And then they're so talented. They're so pliable. They're so moldable. They're teachable. So, I think that their teachableness is really what paved the way for them to be so successful. In the past, my teams weren't very teachable. They thought they knew better than me, better than other people. They wouldn't really listen, and then they were always mad when they didn't win. And these kids are so pliable. They listen to each other. They listen to me. They're good at watching other teams and kind of assessing where they're weak just by watching other teams through the season of tournaments. And so they kind of self-instruct as well. And they're good learners. And because of that, they're all going to be really good at any kind of performance or acting. And most of these kids are going to go on and use their acting skills in something that they're doing, which is really incredible, I think.
Okay. Can one of you give us an example of one of the events you competed in?
I'm Lydia Smith. I did a duo with Ashley Watt, and we did Mary Poppins, and that was very different from anything I've ever done before. It was so much fun.
Were you nervous?
Yeah, like I said, it was different than anything I've done before. I've never really done something like DDF, so it was cool to have this experience.
The thing about duo is they've got to kind of figure out a way to cut the whole show of Mary Poppins down to 10 minutes. Mm. And they have to be more than one character between the two of them. And they've got to pop in and out of those different characters. And both she and Ashley were so wonderful at all the characters that they did. And Ashley is the one who actually cut the script. And the way she cut the script was really brilliant.
Okay. What was the highlight for you?
I'm Kyle Short, by the way. Probably the highlight was winning first in pantomime overall with my partners Brita here and our other partner Matthew, who isn't here right now.
Okay, congratulations. And how about a highlight for you?
My name is Keely Ewing, and I would have to say just going to a first state competition for myself and being able to sit in rooms and watch other people who are at that level and higher levels, like, perform, and it was just fun to see all the talent everywhere.
Okay. And may I ask what year all of you are, give or take?
I'm a sophomore.
Okay.
My name's Brita, and I'm a senior.
Okay.
I'm Kyle again. I'm a senior, too.
And I'm a senior, Liam.
And I, Keely, am a junior.
Okay, so what's next? I imagine this must be a great boost of confidence for all of you, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Brita again. I am going to be pursuing theater for my career choice, which I'm really, really excited about, something I've always been really passionate about, musical theater specifically. I just got back after. It was funny. It was like back-to-back. I got done with college campus tours, and then I went to state, and then I came back from that, so it's been crazy. But, yeah, so I applied to musical theater schools kind of around the Midwest area. I've been accepted at St. Peterson State University for musical theater, which is exciting. I also got a scholarship, which makes my mom very happy.
Okay.
Yeah, and I haven't heard back from other schools yet, but that's one, so I'm excited.
Congratulations. Thank Anyone
you.
Else want to share?
Oh, yeah. I have a duet, actually. I had a duet with my twin sister, Liana. And when it started, I was really excited about it. It was a really great piece. And as it going, it kept it wasn't progressing as well as I thought it would. And so I was starting to lose faith in it. And then so we got some new blocking for it. A friend of ours at TMHS helped us out with it. And we got some new blocking for it. And we took it to state with this new blocking. And it just, I didn't expect it to do as well as it did. And our duet got third place. And I was really excited about that.
Okay. I wish we had a ton more time to keep talking. One last question. Michaela said you all are great students. How would you explain her success as a teacher? It seems like she does a good job.
She just really just encourages you and sort of helps you, like gives you these ways to do things, but still allows you room to pitch in your own ideas and gives you reflections on those, you know, how good she thinks those are, and just really works with you so that she puts stuff into it and you put stuff into it. So it's a collaboration.
Cool. Anyone want to add to that?
Well, and also I'm Keely, and I think it goes to show that winning state itself shows how great of a teacher that Miss Moore is.
Absolutely. Well, again, congratulations. I wish we had a lot more time to talk. But good luck to all of you in the future. Any productions we should be looking out for here soon?
So in May, the Thunder Mountain director is directing Mary Poppins. So in May, that will open. And the neat thing about that one is that we have some students from both schools could audition and be in that play. And so I'm just kind of helping in the background of that. But Mary Poppins will be performed in May.
Great. Thanks again, all of you, and good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And congratulations. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno afternoon today. Looks like the weather tonight, rain likely in the evening, then rain and snow likely late. Tomorrow, rain, snow level 900 feet in the morning. And Thursday, rain likely, highs around 43. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.